Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, it's Healthy Gut Girl. This is Kitty Martone, and you are listening to Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. I am coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine. And, you know, I keep thinking about the term biohacking. And, you know, I think Dave Asprey, if he didn't invent that particular word, he certainly made it a household name. And I know there are different meanings, but, you know, his whole concept when he came out with it was just like experimenting on the body and, you know, doing different biological experiments on the body to try and maximize your biological potential, I guess would be the definition. And I just always thought it was a little too techy for me, as our guest today, Morley Robbins, once again, says, very gearhead-ish, like for people who really like that sort of maybe biochemists or chemists, you know, they'd really like to get into the cogs and the wheels and the nuts and the bolts. And I just kind of haven't really ever been that way, or at least I didn't think I was. And so I didn't really want to get into, I want to see what happens if I use a nicotine patch for 25 seconds out of the day. And, you know, what before I were like, just was not into it at all. I'm just into like more Weston Price style philosophy of just wholesome, old fashioned goodness, you know, going back to our roots of homemade home cooking and homemade everything. And just like, that was my big general swath of color, was just like old school. But then I started to realize, especially now when I am, you know, having Morley Robbins on for the 580th time on my show, he's like, I think I should just call it the Morley and Kitty Show. He's so awesome. He pursues me, by the way. He pursues me because he likes to reach out to people who have loyal audiences. I don't have a Joe Rogan audience, but I have a loyal audience. I have the same people who really want to hear from my guests and the things that I'm biohacking. Anyway, he knows that I have an audience that, you know, will listen to him and wants to hear his message. And so, you know, he's kind of a biohacker, like he's a gearhead, you know, and then there's other people who I've had on the show who are kind of like Kiran Krishnan and different experts that are really into dissecting down to the molecular level, the metabolic level, how we can thrive, you know. And so now that I'm really have gone down the rabbit hole into Dr. Ray Peet's work, and Georgie Dinkoff, who was on my last episode, who you have to listen to if you did not listen to it. It's called Cortisol the Killer and Cortisol the Lifesaver. Anyway, he's a major biohacker, and I'm really into the Generative Podcast now, Generative Energy Podcast by Danny Roddy. These guys are really into looking at these big studies, this data, this science, and getting really, you know, into the weeds and figuring out what is making people sick, what is keeping people ill, what is keeping people from healing. And it's cool. And so anyway, I think that I guess I'm a biohacker, and I guess I have been for a while and just didn't really realize it. So now I'm really into the thyroid, and thanks to my friend Constantine, who I'm going to have on the show really soon. He's like my biohacker friend, and he combs it all out for me because my brain doesn't work like that. I don't like big words. I don't like the chemical processes of stuff. And you're going to see, I get frustrated today with Morley because I'm just like, I don't know what you just said, but it's good. It's good to wrestle with this information, especially if you are not well, if you have imbalances and you're suffering with diseases and, you know, hormone imbalance and all kinds of awful things. It's really good to just keep pushing forward and trying to hear this info, because it's going to illuminate little nuggets of stuff that you're going to want to try. If you're anything like me, you can't take it all in. I can't. I get bored. I have to listen to Morley on 1.5 times fast on my podcast because I even tell him that. And he sounds like a chipmunk, and so do I. But it helps me because I can listen to it over and over, and then stuff starts to stick. It's like throwing spaghetti at the wall, and you're like, oh, that stuck, and that stuck. So for those of you who struggle like I do, not like Constantine, my friend Constantine and a bunch of other friends that I have are just so good at this nerdy stuff. I'm not. So you'll enjoy me getting frustrated with Morley a couple times. And anyway, so here's to biohacking, friends. Enjoy this episode. Hang in there. Listen to it. And listen to us as chipmunks. It's cuter anyway. It goes by faster. And I'll catch you on the back end.
Well, okay, Cooperman is your new word. Is that for, is your new name? So you actually brought up a couple of concepts in the little form you sent me about things that we can talk about that really piqued my interest. But yeah. First, you know, we had a quick chat yesterday and I you and I just get on and then all of a sudden magic happens. And we had even just a little bit of magic happen yesterday because I felt like that my audience needs to hear what we said. And that was just about how, you know, I feel like, you know, you're the bulldozer and I'm like the, I'm like coaxing my audience. Some people are right on board. Some people are super on board with it, but most people, they really need to be coaxed out of the thickets into the clearing where the light is. And it takes some time to do that. And so the problem is, do we have that kind of time, right?
I totally understand that, and I feel the same way. I really think the last 2 years was both an IQ test and a wake-up call.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people didn't pass the test, mm-hmm. and I don't think people realize how fast the window's closing.
Right.
I don't mean to be, and I think you share the sensation, we're not trying to be alarmists. I've got I'm doing a presentation for class that'll be tomorrow night. And I came across a really clever meme that I hadn't seen before. Conspiracy theorists, otherwise known as people capable of pattern recognition.
That's good. I haven't seen that one. I'll have to borrow it.
I'm thinking of that too. Because again, I think one of my gifts, if I have a gift, one of them was pattern recognition. Mm-hmm. You give me some data and I'll tell you where that trend line's going, and clients used to hire me and the team that I worked with to make those kinds of predictions. Mm-hmm. It was in 2008. I did a big forecast in 89. It's kind of a long time ago.
Oh wow.
Predicting what healthcare was going to be like in 2000. And it was a mind-blowing experience. But then in 2008, about 10 years later, a group of hospitals wanted to know, what's healthcare going to be like in 2025? So just a few years from now.
Wow.
And every disease index, Kitty, was just taking off like a hockey stick. And that was one of the three motivators to get me to do this work. I realized that couldn't stay on the sidelines.
And I mean, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because the concept behind how everyone is evolving in their the way they think about health and wellness. I think the wellness industry, I had a podcast guest on the other day, said that it's a $2.8 billion industry or sure. something like that. And so, you know, people have their heads in the game in that way. But it seems like what we're up against is really more to do with that it's a bigger industry to keep us ill. So yes. There's a lot of things that facilitate us not being well. You know, I just a tiny little note here. I was just researching some stuff with some of your people, your fans, and all the way that you and I have this circle, this way of connecting all kinds of people, and we in the same circles. And I was talking to my friend about thyroid health, and I started to realize that you know, I've always thought of thyroid imbalances as being directly related to the gut. And that if you have thyroid issues, don't even work with the thyroid, work with the gut. And though that there is some truth to that, you know, I've always never really actively worked with the thyroid. And so I was talking to my sister about it, and she has this eye problem, which I feel like I'm kind of dealing with too. And she went to her doctor. They did a regular thyroid panel. So it wasn't like, you know, with antibodies and T3 and T4 and all reverse and all that. It was just a plain old panel. Right. And then they're like, oh, you've got something wrong with your muscles. Let's go in and chop the muscles up and then you'll be fine. And of course, now she's not fine and her eye is much worse. Never, ever did these people who are working with eye health ever think to run a full thyroid panel on her. And this is their area of expertise. And you're like, what are you, how could you, and you're going to go in and chop this person's eye up and then go, I don't know. And, you know, it's just not set up in a way, and this is not news to you or I, but it's just not set up in a way that's rational. And so it does not surprise me that the levels of disease were hockey sticks, you know, up, that their increase by 2025 is going to be astounding. Because look at what's going on. The people who were supposed to rely on for the help are, you know, they can't tell their butt from their elbow.
No, it's gotten really alarmingly worse just mm-hmm. in years. And people stay within their specialty mm-hmm. and they don't think to say, is there another way to look at this problem? Mm-hmm. And one thing that's really notable, I remember when I turned 40, I got glasses when I was 16 so that I could drive, so I could see distance. As I got older, I had to get them stronger. And then I turned 40 and I went to get my eyes checked. You need bifocals. I said, I do not need bifocals. I said, just make them stronger and I'll be back in a couple hours. She said, all right. You know, so I come back in a couple hours. And I put on the glasses. I couldn't see anything. I said, what's wrong with this? And she said, Mr. Robbins, I told you you need to buy bifocals. I said, well, damn it, make them bifocals, but don't make it obvious. So then the bifocals led to, as I got older, and I was starting work, doing all the work on these little boxes. Mm-hmm. It's a little tiny type. And so I got the cheater glasses on top of the bifocals so mm-hmm. that I could see that. And then after a few years, I started getting these headaches. And I was like, oh my God. And Dr. Liv said, you're overcorrecting. I said, oh, no. It's good. She said, take your glasses off. I said, well, then I won't be able to see. She said, just try it. Took the glasses off. I could see 2-point font.
Wow.
And that was after several years of doing the RCP, dealing yeah. with the iron problem. And what we're going to talk about is how the iron problem in the liver connects to the eye, but it has everything to do with the thyroid. Mm. Wait a minute, these are all connected? What are you talking about? And it's absolutely fascinating, but it's amazing. Here I am. I'll be 70 this November.
Really?
I don't wear glasses.
Really?
No.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Wait, November what?
November 15th.
Did we know that we were both November babies?
Yeah, I think we did.
November 27th.
I was going to say, my dad was November 29th.
Okay.
So, you know, we're just little scorpions.
I'm a Saggy.
That's right, it's the 22nd.
Yeah.
So one of my most favorite consults was a guy in his 30s with Lyme disease, and he couldn't work. So he taught himself astrology.
Oh, cool.
And so the conversation starts, Morley, what's your birthday? I said, what? I said, no one's ever asked me before. So I told him my birthday. He said, I knew you were a Scorpio.
That's funny.
How'd you know I was a Scorpio? He said, only a Scorpio would dig, dig, dig the way you have. Only a true Scorpio take on the entire medical establishment and not back down. I went, oh, wow. So the thing that's really fun about this conversation is, as we get into the world of thyroid, it's completely opposite of what people think.
Okay.
Well, let me paint a few facts just to kind of sit in the background, and then we'll get into some of the questions and observations that you had yesterday. Because I think it's important people to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff. This does not run the body. That's all mythology. That's what they want us to believe. So let me explain why. So in 1928 was when they first figured out that when you deny an animal copper, iron's going to build in its liver. And that's the pioneering work of Hart, Steinbach, Waddell, and LVM at the University of Wisconsin. Absolute luminaries. They never got the Nobel Prize that they deserved, but there is a brass plaque outside of the biochemistry lab where it took place.
Oh, that's nice.
And what's brass made out of? Copper. And so that becomes a cornerstone of truth. Low copper causes high iron in the liver. And what's the liver connect to? The eye. It's very, very clear connection, traditional Chinese medicine, a lot of things. And when's the big crossover between copper metabolism and iron metabolism? When we turn 40. It's in our early 40s. And so we're beginning to run out of copper and iron starting to build, and it affects our eyesight. And most people need to either get glasses or get stronger glasses when they turn 40.
I mean, it was literally like 3 days within my 40th birthday. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Right. No, it's there's something, it's almost like adolescence. We change hormonally. It's like,
yeah,
the eyes just, they change. What people don't know is how incredibly important copper, iron, and zinc and magnesium are in the eye. I mean, it's just like amazing dance of minerals, but it's an enormous amount of energy that needs to be produced to process the light that's coming in. And the biggest producer of ceruloplasmin, the master antioxidant, is in the liver, far and away the greatest production of it. And they've always theorized that the brain was the second largest producer until Dr. Chen at Northwestern University did a study in 2004. And he discovered, lo and behold, there's six times more ceruloplasmin being made in the eye, in the retina of the eye, than there is in the brain. So what does that mean? It means there's enormous oxidative stress taking place in the eye. And these are not organs, these are nerve endings. And so the metabolism of nerve endings is real important. And the reason why it is important is it means there's a lot of mitochondria behind eye function, enormous, really big numbers. I've never seen one, but I'm going to suggest it's somewhere between 500,000 and maybe a million mitochondria. But I don't have any studies to back that up. It's just think about the order of magnitude of activity. What does that have to do with the thyroid? Well, as the liver starts to fill up with iron, and what's the liver? It's a storage depot for copper and retinol. Retinol is really important for making copper bioavailable. We've talked about that. Mm-hmm. It's the nutrient. It's actually an alcohol. Retinol is an alcohol. And in its alcohol form, it activates a very important, there's actually two copper pumps, one that focuses on making ceruloplasmin, the other that focuses on making all the rest of the copper enzymes, of which there are probably about 30 or more. And these are not just, oh, by the way, that's a copper enzyme. It's like, see the triangle behind my head?
You can't miss it.
I know. the copper enzymes are at the top of the pecking order. They're like, they are in charge of running the body.
Okay.
And in the world of traditional Chinese medicine, copper is the general and iron is the foot soldier. And so we live in a world where the medical meme that runs most decisions is you're anemic and you're copper toxic.
Mm-hmm.
We've all heard that. We've heard those phrases. And they are complete misnomers. They're backwards. And the reason why there's such confusion around this is people don't know how important retinol is to copper metabolism, iron metabolism, liver metabolism, eye metabolism, and thyroid metabolism. Mm. And if you don't have retinol in your diet, and if you don't have good sources of retinol, and what we learned yesterday in our brief exchange is that you've discovered a very important source of retinol.
Yeah.
Heavy cream. right?
Heavy cream. I mean, so heavy cream that's made, I mean, kefir, raw kefir that's made with heavy cream. So then it's fermented.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's divine.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it's yummy. And so we have an old Fanny Farmer cookbook from the late 1800s. And it's just amazing to look at the recipes. And they're all based on lard and heavy cream. It's just, it's a completely different foods that, or meats that you've never heard of because of organ meats. And so everything's been turned upside down and backwards. I think we know that now.
Yeah.
As it relates to the thyroid issue, well, the narrative is the thyroid runs the body. Really? And the first salvo that really got me to wonder what was going on, there's a very famous professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. He wrote a very important article about Synthroid. Well, there's a very important dynamic. I'm trying not to be too much of a gearhead, but when we get into the mitochondria, there's five complexes.
Mm-hmm.
There's four that work together that are called the electron transport chain. And they're moving the electrons down and they're pumping hydrogen. And the goal is to activate oxygen at complex four and turn it into water. And so turn O2 into 2H2O. And when that happens, that's what releases the energy precursors, ADP, to go over to complex five and become magnesium ATP. It's a very important mechanism. And it's got to happen at the pH of 7, which is what water is, right? So it's very, very carefully regulated inside the mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the four complexes, and then you've got this fifth complex, complex five, that's actually making the ATP. Well, when they're together, that's called oxidative phosphorylation. Because we were able to oxidize things over here, we can phosphorylate over here. Very, very important. And it got Miller a Nobel Prize in 1968. So it's a really big deal to know about oxidative phosphorylation. But there's something called uncoupling. You can pull them apart so that you don't make energy the way you're supposed to. And levothyroxine stimulates that process of uncoupling.
Hmm.
It's like, when I read that, I was like, well, that doesn't sound good.
Hmm.
So I kind of like tucked it away. I knew that was out there. You know me well enough to know I'm kind of quirky about this mineral versus hormones. And everybody wants to believe that hormones run the body. And I don't buy that. I think it's mineral status.
Mm-hmm.
And that the hormones are really, they're messengers that are saying, we have a mineral imbalance. We've got to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't run the body. It's a very subtle nuance.
Right.
And the endocrinologists, I know, just roll their eyes when they hear me speak here, I'm sure. But everything changed when I came across the work of Jens Maytag, and his team blew up thyroid narrative. Everyone's focus is to get more T3, the active thyroid hormone, right?
Mm-hmm. T3.
So where does that come from? Well, the T4 is made in the thyroid. It works its way to the liver. Over 90% of the T4 is converted into T3. It's not converted in the thyroid.
Right.
It's converted in the liver. And that deiodinase enzyme, they call it a selenium enzyme, but it doesn't work without copper. Ding, ding, ding.
Hmm.
And so that frustrates the scientists and clinicians. The two biggest selenium enzymes, glutathione and the deiodinase, they don't work without copper. It's like, well, who's really leading the show here? So we've got to turn T4 into T3, and then what the pundits would have us believe is that T3 is the spark inside the mitochondria. What? So we've got 40 quadrillion mitochondria, and it's like there's not 40 quadrillion T3s, just there's not enough to go around.
Mm-hmm.
But what the T3 is, T3 is an oxygen sensor. How's that oxygen burning inside the mitochondria? And all hormones are signaling molecules, right? That's their job, is if we've got a problem, we've got to relay signal and get something done. Mm-hmm. That is their job. Every hormone has an active and storage status. Every hormone has a location of function, and every hormone has an action that it's responsible for. T3, it's hanging out inside the mitochondria, and it's in the mechanism of the complex 4, which is where the action is, mm-hmm. which is where oxygen is in fact being turned into water. And if that does not happen, complex 4, it's a two-stroke engine, and there are two copper centers. There's a copper A and a copper B. And I've been studying the mitochondria for a lot of years, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. And just a couple months ago, I went, oh my God, it's a dimer. What does that mean? It means it's a mirror image. And so it isn't just two copper centers, it's 4 copper centers. There's twice as much copper in that complex because it's absolutely a mirror image on two sides. Hmm. And so it's that begins to bring a level of wow. It seems like everybody missed that. And so,
well, it's easy to miss because it's hard to even know exactly what you're saying, because it's really like the intricacies of the mitochondria. It's very like hard to,
it's like a choo-choo
hang in there.
It's a,
you know what I mean?
You really,
so it is wow.
I get it.
But I'm hanging in there. I'm writing it down, processing. Okay.
And I'm trying to be playful about it. I'm trying to, you know, if you have questions, you know me well enough just to punch me in the nose and say, but we're inside complex 4.
Complex 4, right.
Two-stroke engine. Downstroke turns oxygen into hydrogen peroxide. That's not what we want. We want to turn H2O2 into 2H2O. And that takes another stroke and more copper to do that.
Okay.
And when the mitochondria is stressed out, like most of us are stressed out, mm-hmm. mitochondria is stressed out, they're going to default into making more hydrogen peroxide. Mm. Because when we are stressed out, we lose magnesium in the acute phase, and we lose copper in the chronic phase of stress. The last 2 years have been chronic stress for everybody on the planet. We don't need to argue that.
Right.
And just for grins and giggles, I've renamed COVID. So COV stands for coppers vanished, and ID stands for irons dysregulated. And we're back to the research of 1928. When copper is low, iron is building. Mm-hmm. But doctors are not trained in that. They're trained in the inverse. Copper is toxic, iron's anemic. Mm. That's the lie.
Right. The big myth.
The big myth. Okay. So we're back to the mitochondria.
Okay.
And we're trying to make water. Dr. Mitag figured out is that T3, as the signaling molecule, sends its signal back to the liver. It said, we're not burning the oxygen properly. We're making too much oxidative stress. From the T3 to the liver, and the message is, make more ceruloplasmin. Why is that important? Because ceruloplasmin has many different functions in the body, but it's the master antioxidant, expresses many different enzyme functions.
And it's copper dependent.
Copper dependent, and it has 8 copper atoms inside it, and it can carry another 10 coppers in its structure. It's a supply depot for copper. Who is it supplying copper to? The mitochondria. Hmm. And when the mitochondria are not activating oxygen, invariably it's because they don't have enough copper. And so T3, liver, give me some more ceruloplasmin, supply line comes in, and it's like everything is the reverse. And what Dr. Mitag talks about is that there's a correlation between serum copper and T4 and the ferrooxidase function and T3. And actually, the ferrooxidase enzyme is one of the most important enzymes that's expressed by ceruloplasmin. And it's what regulates oxygen and iron in our body. It's a very, very important enzyme. Hmm. And it makes sense that T3 wants to make sure that the body is properly regulating oxygen and iron status in the body. And so the one added nuance that people need to be aware of is that let's go back to making T4. And what we're told is that it involves ascorbate. Does that mean ascorbic acid or does that mean vitamin C complex? And so there's a difference between iodide and iodine. Mm-hmm. And what does the T4 really need? Well, what does T4 and T3 really mean? Well, the T is tyrosine. It's a tyrosine amino acid. What's getting attached to it? 4 iodine. But what's in our diet? Iodide. Mm. Iodide needs to be turned into iodine. Who does that? Oh, it's a copper enzyme that does that. So maybe given that there's tyrosine and there's the need for this conversion, well, wouldn't it make sense to use real vitamin C complex? Because the engine in vitamin C is tyrosinase. And tyrosinase is a very powerful enzyme, has 2 coppers at its core, incredibly powerful inside the body. And so the mechanism to make that happen, wow, that makes perfect sense that we would be using real vitamin C, not this synthetic ascorbic acid. Mm-hmm. It's got the copper that we need. Oh, and if you want to actually make the hormone, when you go inside the process of making the hormone, you have to have the thyroid receptor needs to marry up with another receptor. It's called RXR. That's retinoid X receptor. And if TR is not married to RXR, you cannot make T4. The transcription doesn't take place to actually produce that protein, that peptide. And so what's the origin of RXR? We got to start with vitamin A. Back to retinol. It's stored in the liver, right? Mm-hmm. It gets broken down in the liver so that it can be used in the thyroid. And it's like all these interconnections. And then anyone who has any kind of vision problems probably has a retinol deficiency. Mm. And so, again, this idea that this gland, it's an important gland. I'm not denying its importance, but it doesn't run the body. It responds to metabolic activity. Mm-hmm. And it's not in charge per se. And the part of the thyroid panel that's never done, to me, it's the most glaring defect, is that in a full thyroid panel, you're going to look at TSH. At some point, you're going to look at TSH. Mm-hmm. That's the hormone that's coming out of the pituitary, right? And the pituitary tells the thyroid, oh, we need more T4. That's the way we're supposed to think of it. Mm-hmm. Well, the TSH is a major, and there's a general above the major. And the general hangs out in the hypothalamus. And the general is called TRH, thyroid regulating hormone. Now, here's where it gets really important. TRH is copper dependent.
No.
What is the cause? And the way it works is for the gearheads, there's an enzyme called PAM enzyme, kisses TRH to activate. And the PAM enzyme has copper in it and activates the TRH. But when that kiss and run does not happen, when TRH is not active, the general loses his voice or her voice. And then the major has to start screaming. And so then TSH will rise. Mm-hmm. As soon as you see an elevated TSH on a thyroid panel, you know the individual's under stress, copper deficient, and very likely retinol deficient.
Mm-hmm.
That's the side that, how many people are talking about copper and retinol for thyroid function?
Nobody.
Not very many. And so the thing is, what I think we've learned in the last couple of years, if we've learned nothing else in the last couple of years, it's to question the official narrative.
Mm-hmm.
100% of it, soup to nuts. Mm-hmm. We've got to stop saying, well, I know they're out to get us out here, but I believe my endocrinologist. No, you've got to question everything, because the people that brought us the last couple of years are the people who are educating the doctors.
Right.
And it's like, and what's their objective? To sell us more stuff.
Yeah, Medicaid.
Yeah. And what I think you and I are committed to is, what can we do to empower people, to educate people, to learn how to heal themselves and deal with their stress, but also enable their body to restore itself and revitalize itself. And that's really what it comes down to. And that's really what the book, you know, Cure Your Fatigue, is trying to give people kind of an instruction manual of how do you get from where you are to where you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And break it down into its component parts.
Right. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. I wanted to briefly interrupt and remind you about Just Thrive spore-based probiotics. And I wanted you to listen to a quick clip of Kiran Krishnan, the celebrity microbiologist, talking about how important a diverse microbiome is and spore-based probiotics.
And the biggest issue with the allergies and all the crazy sensitivities, when you look at the prevalence rate of peanut allergies and environmental allergens, and the fact that asthma is now among kids is a pandemic, you know, all of these things are because of the loss of oral tolerance. The loss of oral tolerance means that what we used to be able to do is take in huge amounts of different, you know, proteins and antigens and things that people would now be allergic to. The immune system would be able to sample it. The bacteria within your gut would be there to help the immune system figure out, this is something you need to attack and this is something you need to leave alone. That's the process of immune tutoring. And that is lost when we lose the diversity in our microbiome.
Thanks for listening to Kiran Krishnan. If you want to use your coupon code HGG20 to get 20% off, just go to justthrivehealth.com and check out all the great things they have. And now back to the show.
Well, you made me think of something with regards to whole food vitamin C, and like, don't we have to convert it and break it down ultimately to ascorbic acid anyway?
Well, there, of course there is ascorbic acid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the role of ascorbic acid is to protect the components of the vitamin C complex. So a good analogy for people to think about is, most of us drive cars.
Mm-hmm.
So a car has an engine, steering wheel, four wheels, and a cover, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the vitamin C molecule. That's the complex. Ascorbic acid is the cover of the car and no moving parts. And the level of misinformation about ascorbic acid versus vitamin C complex is legendary. But again, another cornerstone of truth is a letter written by a letter to the editor to Nature Journal.
Mm-hmm.
Like top of the pecking order, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Albert Svendgaardi, who gets the Nobel Prize in December of 1937, on July 4th, 1936, he writes a letter to the editor of Nature Journal and says, ascorbic acid does not cure scurvy. He puts it in black and white. He was studying hyaluronic acid, very important for wound repair. Hyaluronic acid, it's a big deal. What did he get the Nobel Prize for? Hexahyaluronic acid. Well, hexahyaluronic acid sounds like hyaluronic acid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's another way of saying ascorbic acid. And that's when everything got switched. And ever since 1937, I would assert that we've been poisoned with ascorbic acid. And why am I so hard on ascorbic acid? And this drives like guys like Dr. Levy crazy. They just go, they just lose it.
Mm-hmm.
But ascorbic acid blocks copper absorption. That's a fact. Ascorbic acid increases iron uptake in the enterocyte. And you, as a specialist in gut health, you know that mm-hmm. there's a two-step process to absorption. It's, if this is an enterocyte and these are the villi,
mm-hmm.
it's easy to get iron into the enterocyte. Then we got to get it into the bloodstream, which is down here.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get it through the blood into the bloodstream, there's an exit door here called ferroportin, iron doorway, ferroportin. And the doorman is copper. And so if you don't have enough copper in your diet, and if it's not bioavailable, then the iron gets stuck here. And so there's an increased absorption of iron in the gut that will, it's going to start in the duodenum, and then it's going to work its way into the colon. And this, and if these are two enterocytes, what holds them together?
Mm-hmm.
It's energy. It's a magnetic attraction based on energy. And when the energy starts to break down, they start to come apart. And that's how the particles get through. They get into the bloodstream because
leaky gut.
The leaky gut. And so the ascorbic acid blocking copper, increasing iron absorption, increased production of hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide is important. It's a signaling molecule, but again, it's got to be a bell-shaped curve. And if it gets out too far, it begins to really disrupt the cellular function.
Hmm.
And then we find out that in 1948, when they were first unveiling the research that was being done on ceruloplasmin protein, mm-hmm. one of the first things they talked about was how ascorbic acid denatures ceruloplasmin. Well, what does that mean? Denature. That's a very polite term, right? What it means is that it oxidizes a key tyrosine molecule or amino acid, which is a trapdoor in ceruloplasmin. Trapdoor opens and the coppers come out like diarrhea.
Hemorrhage.
Yeah, literally. You're hemorrhaging copper. And that's the typical source of so-called copper toxicity.
Hmm.
And what were people taking the last couple of years? The COVID cocktail. Ascorbic acid, vitamin D, and zinc.
Mm-hmm.
It destroys copper metabolism. Maybe we can talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But then we've got one of my, I've got a network of people around the world who love to send me information. And I just heard something from a colleague in Europe who found an article about ascorbic acid alters the bioavailability of retinol. Again, we have this mind-numbing. Yeah, but why does GNC sell it? Why is my doctor telling me to do it? Why was I being told to take ascorbic acid? It's because nobody understands copper metabolism.
There's so many things like that, though, down from vitamin D to, you know, even iron, you know, taking iron.
Absolutely. And the part that a lot of people don't know about with vitamin D, since you brought it up, is it blocks retinol uptake. And the real shocker for me was just a couple months ago. There's a famous physician trained at Columbia and spent a number of years working at Rockefeller Institute. That should make everyone's sphincters tighten up. So his name is Montrose Burroughs. And what did he figure out? He figured out that vitamin A deficiency, and he wrote an article in 1925. And then he wrote four articles in 1926. Well, when you write five articles, it's kind of hard to ignore that. But apparently everyone did. Even in the modern era, they know that retinol deficiency is a major issue with cancer and cancer metabolism. But nobody talks about it. And what's the treatment of choice for cancer? Tetramolybdate. It's four molecules of molybdenum. And what is that? It's one of the perfect copper chelators. And so people with cancer have high copper in the blood. Oh, you're copper toxic. Well, when something is high in the blood, it means it's low in the tissue. And people who have cancer are anemic. Oh, so iron's low in the blood. What's that mean? It's high in the tissue. The cutting edge treatment for cancer today is iron chelation therapy. It's the exact opposite of what
people. Is that always the case? Can you have high iron in the blood and high iron in the tissues?
I'm sure that anything's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's a seesaw function.
Okay.
And
wow. It really, and to simplify it all, it really is about like how bastardized our food is and what we've been told to eat and not eat, you know. It really is, because it's hard to get vitamin A. It really is, vitamin A is in all these high quality, really good foods. And who does that? Who can afford that? And, you know, where do you live? Can you get these really high quality foods? And it's like you have to really, unless you're already doing it, you have to completely shift how you feed yourself and how you view food and how you access food. And in my opinion, you have to have a perception of food as medicine. You have to be like 80% of what I consume is medicine and 20% is, you know, soul food or however you want to say it. But this stuff here we're talking about, you're getting enough, you know, first of all, shifting your thought process from I have to be a plant-based eater. I mean, let's talk about that.
Sure. No, it's again, the programming that we've been subjected to throughout our lives is, it's mind-numbing. I mean, it really is. And again, we've had this wake-up call now. Not everyone's responded to it, but I think there is a select few who are like, oh my gosh. And it's not just healthcare where there's bad signals. We don't need to get into all that, but the point is we live on a pretty challenging planet. There's a lot of stress on this planet, and we're waking up to the reality of all that stress. Mm-hmm. And when you come to realize just how stressful it is, just how misled and misfed we've been. Well, then you're burning through minerals really fast, and the food that you're talking about becomes so essential.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires a complete reversal of the thought process. And again, become a conspiracy analyst, connect the dots, stop mm-hmm. listening to the accepted sources of information,
mm-hmm.
really begin to question, could there be another story? Could there be another way of seeing this?
Right.
Could the whole process of iron deficiency anemia, which is the number one, we're supposed to believe it's the number one nutrient deficiency on the planet, according to who? The World Health Organization. So that, right away, we go, oh, wait a minute, maybe there's a flaw in that.
Mm-hmm. But
the thing is, back to the general and the foot soldier.
Mm-hmm.
If the general is missing, the foot soldiers are going to act out, and the foot soldiers get stuck in the tissue. And no one talks about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me of my analogy where I always say that estrogen is the lion and progesterone is the lion tamer. And so since I brought estrogen up, you had something to say about the double-edged sword that is estrogen. You want to bite into that one?
Sure. So again, we're talking about ceruloplasmin and its job. It has many jobs.
The master antioxidant in the body.
Master antioxidant. Ben Ebers likes to call it the Swiss Army knife of antioxidants. It's a great analogy.
Which is copper dependent and which is also reliant on vitamin A retinol.
Exactly.
Okay.
And in the world, in the contemporary age, people don't know what copper is and they have a hard time finding good sources of retinol. Copper has been under attack for a century.
Mm.
They've changed farming practices, food processing, and pharmaceuticals. And the nexus is copper. And it's like, maybe in another conversation, we can have that chat. But the point is, there's a recognized deficiency of copper 80% loss of copper over the last 80 years.
Wow.
That's a big loss of copper. And I had one of the peak experiences of my lifetime. Just yesterday morning, I was chatting with a mentor of one of my students. She's a naturopath, this individual named John, naturopath, chiropractor, but he's really an alchemist. And he's 76 years old, and he knows more about copper and iron and other minerals.
Love it.
It was absolutely amazing. And mm-hmm. He said, you need to understand one thing, really, it's really important. I said, yeah, I can't wait to find out. He said, copper is a magnet for sunlight.
Is a magnet for sunlight.
Right. And it's all this talk about, we need to go out in the sun and make vitamin D. Well, what's vitamin D? It's sunglasses. So putting the filter on the magnet. It's like, oh my God. So the thing is, ceruloplasmin, you got to have copper, you got to have retinol. And if the body doesn't have access to that, the body's still going to make ceruloplasmin.
Mm-hmm.
And when the body makes ceruloplasmin and it's empty, it lives for 6 hours. When the ceruloplasmin gets made and copper gets loaded in it, it lasts for 6 days. Well, there's a big difference between 6 hours and 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the body doesn't have access to the raw materials, the copper and the retinol, to make the ceruloplasmin function, there's a plan B. And plan B antioxidant is estrogen. And estrogen has a very powerful relationship with iron. And when you mix iron and estrogen together, what does it do? It grows things. It's a really powerful growth engine. And what I think is important for people to appreciate is that everything on this planet, every chemical in our body especially, responds to oxygen status inside our body. And that goes for hormones, neurotransmitters, all the sophisticated enzymes that we rely on. It's like if that T3 is sensing things are out of whack, we need to pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue is not to pummel the thyroid. It's to stimulate the production of bioavailable copper so that ceruloplasmin can lower the need for estrogen. Because what happens is estrogen, as you've described, it is this lion. And it does need the lion tamer. Well, how do you secrete the lion tamer? It's a copper-dependent function. You can't secrete progesterone to meet the need if you don't have bioavailable copper. And it's just, it's in the literature. I mean,
wow.
It's so central to how the body communicates.
That's going to be the cornerstone of this episode, I feel like, because it's like, boing, what? At least for me, it's just like, because it roots in everything else you've been talking about. It's kind of like, when I say to people, the estrogen is the lion and progesterone, the lion tamer, it does the same thing to a lot of people where they're like, oh, I get it. We need the lion, but it can't be let loose. It needs to be tame. It needs to have its tamer. Otherwise, it's going to run amok and grow things. It's going to run amok and kill you. And then, so now you're saying, what is the lion tamer dependent on? And it's got a general, and that general is the same general that almost the whole body is reliant on, which is this, this ceruloplasmin master antioxidant. And that is the cornerstone.
It is. And to me, the human body runs on bioavailable copper. Period. It's the best kept secret on the planet.
Wow.
And so, again, here's an example. 1927, two of the greatest minds of medicine that ever worked, they actually worked with each other, Hans Krebs, Otto Warburg, and they do a very important experiment in 1927 with pigeons and geese. And what they did was they bled these birds to create true iron deficiency anemia. Because when you bleed a bird and there's no blood, there's no iron, right?
Well, aren't they dead?
No, they knew how far they had to go to create deficiency.
Okay, so literally reduce the amount of volume of blood in the bird. Okay.
Massive loss of iron, massive loss of blood, loss of iron. And then they wanted to measure, how does the blood change in response to that loss of iron? And what shocked them was that there's a threefold increase of copper enzymes in the pigeons and a sixfold increase of copper enzymes in the geese, because copper regulates iron. And the copper enzymes were needed to make sure we can get the iron back into circulation. What did they do with that research?
Mm-hmm. They used it to line the bird cages.
It's like a two-page article. And it's like, it's amazing. And then just to punctuate this, and it's a land grab in science trying to figure out copper and iron, because they knew that they were involved in energy production. Mm-hmm. It was like, there was no zinc. Zinc was like, what are you talking about? It's copper and iron. That's really what the metals are. And the next year, Hans Krebs, he's the guy that figures out there's a massive explosion of copper in a pregnant woman. Why? Because there needs to be a copper download from mother to fetus that takes place in the last trimester of the pregnancy. And it's like, there isn't a massive download of iron. There's not a massive download. But you and I have livers that have about 7 milligrams of copper. And when we were little babies and just born, our liver had 70 milligrams of copper, a tenfold increase. And that's true of all mammals. And so that copper in the liver, coupled with the retinol download called breast milk, that retinol and that copper forms the basis of the immune system for the baby for the first 2 years of life.
Wow.
It takes 2 years for their immune system to really come online. Those are the two critical components. And what's the singular focus of birthing practitioners in the modern era? Iron and vitamin D.
Right.
It's in total conflict with Mother Nature. Why? Because there's no iron, no vitamin D in breast milk.
You know what's interesting? I just read something, and I don't know where it was, about the anemia, that a lot of pregnant women become anemic, quote unquote anemic, and that this doctor was saying, and that is actually a good thing. Like, this is a good thing that they're anemic, and we don't need to plug them full of iron. And this is, like you're talking about with the download, where it's actually all part and parcel to creating this baby. And instead of looking at it in that way, they're saying, oh, all women are defective and they become anemic when they're pregnant, instead of looking at, oh, I wonder why so many women become anemic. And this is,
it's a natural process. The technical term for it is called hemodilution. The blood volume is growing, but Mother Nature knows we don't need more hemoglobin, we just need more blood volume. What people need to understand is that there's, when we've got blood, it's red, that's red fluid, right? You put in a centrifuge, spin it down, and you get two fluids back. You get, at the bottom of the test tube, you're going to get packed red blood cells. That's the red part. And then there's an equal amount of kind of a milky fluid, and that's called serum. But let's spell it properly.
Are you going to blow my mind right now?
I hope so. And so serum, let's spell it S-E-A-R-U-M, because it's supposed to have the mineral composition of seawater. And so blood is packed red blood cells floating, swimming in seawater. That's what it's supposed to be. And when the woman's pregnancy is progressing, in the second half of the pregnancy, hemoglobin is supposed to go from 12 down to as low as 8.5. Anywhere between 8.5 and 9.5 is considered perfectly normal, perfectly safe. And the study that really punctuates that was done by Philip Steer. He's a world-renowned OBGYN out of the UK, and he did a study of 150,000 live births. Wow. I would have been impressed if he had done 1,500, but 150,000 live births, and he was measuring two variables, hemoglobin status of the mother, birth weight of the baby. And the healthiest babies were born to mothers who had a hemoglobin between 8.5 and 9.5.
Wow.
Absolutely. It's in the literature. The practitioners.
Just to give any listeners an idea here, when you're not pregnant, it's usually like what, between like 11 and 13, your hemoglobin is normal, not natural healthy. So yeah, pregnant 12, woman.
12 to 13 would be considered very healthy. And a really important number for women to know, women who are producing babies, they need to know the hemoglobin in their body just before they deliver. Hmm. And if it's notably higher than 9.5, and it usually is, because the practitioner doesn't understand copper ion metabolism, what, think of the womb. It's becoming an iron cage.
Yikes.
And so that iron cage is going to affect the proper development of the fetus. And there are actually three really important enzymes that regulate copper and iron in the pregnant woman's body. Mm-hmm. And all three of them are found in the placenta. Ceruloplasmin, they have something called hefestin. Mm-hmm. Hefestin is especially important in the enterocytes, but it's also important for the placenta. The trophoblasts love hefestin. And then everyone's favorite, zyklopen, Z-Y-K-L-O-P-E-N. You've never heard of it. And those three copper proteins are managing different facets of copper ion transfer between mother and child. And here's the acid test question. For all your listeners out there who are pregnant or want to become pregnant, ask your birthing practitioner to measure those three proteins.
They're going to go, what?
and it's they're gonna think you're from Mars. And this is the pioneering work of Harry McArdle. He's a famous OBGYN in Scotland, and he's studying this all the time. And it's tragic that this is not taught in doctor school, not taught in midwife school, it's not taught in doula school. And this is the foundation of our well-being.
Yeah.
To manage these minerals because they're reacting with oxygen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've read so many studies recently about the importance of progesterone throughout the pregnancy of the, you know, all three trimesters. And these study and all these doctors, these OBs, they're still thinking that progesterone is only important in the first trimester. I mean, of course they don't know about the iron and these three proteins, you know, it's really pathetic actually. You know, I was reminded of a friend's birth that I attended, a home birth, and her midwife, after she had the baby, we went into the kitchen with the placenta, and she turned it inside out over her hand. And this friend of mine happened to be like living on almost all like, you know, bee pollen and just like eating it by the spoonfuls and cream and raw meat. And just, she was just exceptionally healthy. And she was showing us the placenta, which was really beautiful and looked like a big jellyfish. Right. And then she said, but look at this. And she had gone full term and she kind of pulled part of it apart with her finger like this and was showing us. And it looked like little fish bones. Like she said, see this? She goes, this is calcification of the placenta. She said, when most women who are not as healthy as this woman, she said, 75% of this could be calcified on the inside. And they're like, and she said, like living in a cage. And I was like, so when you said that, I went, oh my gosh, this is probably the same thing you're talking about, which is just this sort of, you know, lack of oxygen, this calcification, this iron excess.
My two favorite quotations around pregnancy, Mildred Seelig's famous saying is, pregnancy is a magnesium deficient state, stem to stern, magnesium deficient state. Mm. Joseph Barcroft, he's studying people who are mountain climbers because he's fascinated by how the body responds to no oxygen. How do we adapt to being at 19,000 feet? Mm-hmm. And then in his later years, when he got into his 60s, he turned his attention from alpine physiology to obstetrics. And his famous saying is, pregnancy is Mount Everest in utero.
Ooh.
Now, what most people don't know is that in the first trimester, there's between 1 and 3% oxygen in the womb. You and I are breathing air that has about 20% oxygen in it. And so the womb is an anaerobic environment.
Mm.
It turns out the fetus is a parasite, an anaerobic parasite living inside an aerobic mom. And how do you make energy anaerobically? Well, there's 10 enzymes. And how many of them require magnesium? 8. And that's why Mildred Seelig said pregnancy is a magnesium deficient state, constant loss of magnesium. And what's the one thing that birthing practitioners never measure? Magnesium status. And it should be something that women are taking magnesium the whole time they're in pregnancy. They should be taking magnesium baths. And so you've got this conflict between the lack of oxygen in the womb and the physiology of anaerobic metabolism and what that all means. And it's being and what's the worst thing you can do to an anaerobic environment? Feed iron. I think it's sinful what's happening.
Well, it would explain, you know, a lot of girls, like I have some very, very young pregnant clients and friends who are very young and pregnant, and they're miserable. They're absolutely miserable. And I said, you know, there was a time when you, like, you'll ask my mom and like her sisters and her aunts who were like, being pregnant was the best time of my life. And they're like, it was like, I wish I could have just stayed pregnant forever. And they're like, what? And I think that this is all part of it. It's just, they're miserable. They're progesterone deficient. They're iron toxic. They don't have ceruloplasmin. They don't have retinol. They don't have magnesium. And they are miserable. They're seasick. You know, they're constantly with hypermensis gravidarium, and they have, you know, preeclampsia, and they have kidney issues with the babies having kidney and bladder issues. I've got so many clients who have had this, and the doctors are like, it's normal. They'll grow out of it. It'll be fine. There's a procedure we can do when they're born. Here's a medication that you can take. And it's just disgusting. And it's sad. And really, it comes down to this whole thing about the bastardization of our food and just having an awareness. And that's one thing, you know, I can talk to them till I'm blue in the face. But if the doctor turns around and says, what, progesterone? And you're already in your 16th week, who the hell told you that? You know, and they're just like, psh, then they put you off. And so I don't blame the person, because they don't know. They're just got white coat syndrome.
Right.
But meanwhile, we're having these babies being born ill and deficient already, you know, with estrogen dominance and toxic iron in their tissues already. And they're having colic and gut health issues. And, you know, it's really very sad.
It is. And there's a lot of, what people need to understand is that in an environment, if you're not managing the oxidative stress in that womb, that oxidative stress is not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
The oxidative, the correlation between preeclampsia and oxidative stress is like this. And when you have preeclampsia, ceruloplasmin function is almost non-existent. The activity level, again, think of the level of an enzyme being a parked car. Think of the function of the enzyme being a car on the highway.
Yeah.
And what our labs do is measure parked cars, not cars on highway.
And right. It's
hard for people to realize, like, well, why would they do that? Then, you know, go ask your local FDA representative why they.
Right.
You know,
just you said the ceruloplasmin. So people with preeclampsia have really next to no ceruloplasmin. Well, guess what else they have next to none when they are progesterone? I mean, when they have preeclampsia is progesterone. It goes hand in hand. Low progesterone, you know, besides miscarriage, is also responsible for, the morning sickness, the hypermensis, gravidarium, and also the gestational diabetes. Absolutely. And so here now we're talking about the lack of ceruloplasmin, therefore the lack of the enzyme that secretes the progesterone. Therefore, I mean, it's just like, it's a vicious little cycle here.
Right. And again, people don't know. I would encourage people who are listening with this, if you are pregnant or if you're thinking about getting pregnant, really question the prenatal you're taking, because it usually has way too much iron, far too much iron. The vitamin A in it is synthetic. It's not the form that you need. There's not enough copper in it. The B vitamins are synthetic, and it's
the C vitamins are synthetic. It probably has magnesium citrate instead of magnesium glycinate or any of the other really profoundly great magnesiums.
I think there's an enzyme or a supplement that North American Urban Spice makes, and I'm blanking on the name of it. I'll text it to you so you have it.
Okay.
So you have show notes, but people don't realize how compromised they are by the prenatals.
Mm-hmm.
They're not your friend, and everyone takes them. One of my physician colleagues, was selling a prenatal, and I just happened to be at the front desk when this woman came in to get her prenatal, and I said, I'm curious, can I just take a look at it? Guess how much iron is in her prenatal? This is every day. She was getting 65 milligrams of iron every day.
Wow.
We need one. She's getting 2 months worth of iron every day. And that meant the fetus was getting overwhelmed with iron.
Unbelievable.
It is. It really is. And so it really is fundamentals. And I think I've never really done the research. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I've never researched. I would guess
in light of you.
I know. But what you're saying about progesterone, it must be an antioxidant. But I bet it's an antioxidant that does not give off exhaust. Estrogen.
It is it's catabolic, right? And it breaks things down. Right. It's anti-inflammatory.
There you go.
It's given to people who have traumatic brain injuries to help reduce inflammation in the brain. So you must be right. And there's no, that the liver doesn't really have to deal. You're right, because it doesn't have the exhaust that estrogen would when you're conjugating at the liver and having that byproduct, all those byproducts, which can cause cancer and have to be removed. We have a whole microbiome called the estrobilome in the bowel just to handle the exhaust of the estrogen, if you put it that way, right?
Estrobilome?
Estrobilome, which is specifically to help us metabolize toxic estrogens. And they eat fiber, right? They eat prebiotic fiber. And if you are extinct in that microbiome, that colony, then you're going to recycle that estrogen back into the body, which is going to be far more toxic than it was the first go around. Progesterone doesn't have that problem. It doesn't have that issue at all. In fact, it gets excreted at the kidneys if it needs to be. It goes through the liver, but it doesn't create it creates allopregnanolone as a metabolite, which can make some women sleepy or drowsy. Oh, God forbid we get sleepy before bedtime. And this just doesn't have the same toxic issues. And so, but you know, going back to what the conventional science says and the narrative is that progesterone causes cancer and progesterone, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, progesterone pretty great. I love it. When you do that research, will you get back to me? Because I want to know.
No, I know. No, I think it's important to understand we have been misled and misfed.
Yeah.
It's important to question the narrative and embrace nature. We've been
Amen.
Turned away from what our ancestors were talking about, your mom and aunts, they're the women before them. That's where that natural way has been lost.
It has.
Probably 30 to 40 years. It's been completely blown.
Right.
Blender.
God has a plan. He had a beautiful design, and we went and mucked it up.
Well, and I think what the focus on the minerals and understanding the oxygen and all that allows the individual to get back to original factory settings.
Mm-hmm.
The body really knows what to do. It has a wisdom that's far beyond anything we understand. But if it doesn't have the basic building parts, mm-hmm. it doesn't have the minerals and the fat soluble vitamins and things like that, then it doesn't know what to do because it can't execute its plan.
Yeah. So I want to just say to my listeners that for those of you that have a heart, if you've made it this far, because I know a lot of people are like, I don't understand. And I'm like, just hang in there. Trust me.
Listen to it again.
Trust me. Put it on two times or 1.5 times fast and listen to Morley Like a Chipmunk and you'll start to get it, you know? And you don't have to be a gearhead to start to let this stuff sit. And the reason is because it's part of the grand design. You're meant to understand it on an intrinsic intuitive level. You don't have to sit down and say ceruloplasmin and the E to the second root of the power of, you just have to listen to it. That's why I know. I'm glad you caught that.
Yeah.
It has to sit. It will sit. It will hit you in the right places because your body on a cellular, even deeper on a mitochondrial level gets this information and it'll start to resonate. I really believe that. It did with me. I'm not a gearhead and I totally, you know, am now a Morley nerd.
I know. You know what's going to be on my tombstone? Morley Chipmunk. I know. I think it would be good for the listeners to, when did it really click for you? What was it that really drove it home and you went, oh, now I get it?
I think there were layers because, when you explained it to me, when I had 7.2 hemoglobin and you were trying to convince me not to get blood transfusions, I was literally sitting in the cancer unit while they were giving my husband and my mother by my side while they were going to give me infusions.
I remember that.
And you were texting me and you were nothing short of begging me not to do it. And my mom was like, don't you listen to that Morley person. She was like, don't you dare.
That chipmunk.
And so I did it, of course, because my mom was there and we were scared and I didn't know what to do next. And still came home after that first couple of transfusions and still passed out and still ended up in the ER with a transfusion. So, you know, it was a little too late for me to have to fully implement your protocol and my protocol, of course, that I was already, that I had. It was too late to put it all together. So through that process, I was having realizations about my iron toxicity and how I would grow polyps and cysts and fibroids. Like they were, you know, I had a very healthy garden of masses in my body and I'd get them out and be back again and get them out. Oh, you've got another cyst. This was me. I would grow anything but babies, you know, because I couldn't, because I had an iron cage, right? So that it was one layer after the next, and that where I had like an aha moment with your work. And I would go, aha, wow. So that is what I'm growing. The iron is growing this. And so I'd like to say it was just one day I wake up and went, oh my goodness, but it wasn't. It was multiple. And then processing the info, you know, when you talk about the fourth complex and this, and these things are big concepts for people and mm-hmm. for me. And so I have to just hang in there and trust it because I know it's true. And that's part of it. You know, you've got to believe in it. You really do. You have to trust that all these people with these testimonials, and then ask yourself, has taking iron and taking vitamin D for all this time, has it helped me? Or am I still in this estrogen dominance group saying nothing is helping me? What's going on? Maybe it's time to say, okay, maybe I shouldn't take vitamin D. Maybe I should look at this in a different way. So I'm sure that's what's happening to a lot of members in the group, just like it happened to me. It's like layers of the onion, you know?
And I think the hard part is for people to realize that the truth is the exact opposite of what they've been doing.
Right. That's cognitive dissonance, right? It's really hard to say, wow, this vaccine actually isn't working and I need three more. And oh, wow, COVID is actually, I didn't die. And oh, you know, like these things are hard when you're just fed fear constantly, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And what people need to know is in a state of fear, we attract iron.
Fear.
And iron activates the fear sensor in our body. It's like,
for the listeners that didn't catch that, fear, F-E-A-R, F-E is the periodic table listing for iron.
So it's just, again, these little subtle nuances that once you begin to let those pearls drop in, it's like, oh, now it makes so much more sense.
There's a design.
I think it makes so much, I appreciate what you're saying about it was waves of understanding.
Yeah. And I still have them. I'm still like today with the thyroid, it was hard for me to grasp that, but I'm like, wait a minute, you know, that makes sense. And I've been ignoring it for so long and no wonder I can't. So by the way, I didn't even mention this. Maybe the absorption of topical progesterone and even oral progesterone, the varying degrees of why women have such like differences in how they absorb. You know, it's so dramatic. Some women just don't absorb 3%. Some women absorb 20. Some women don't do creams. Some women do oral. It is crazy and no one can put their finger on it, but it's the thyroid connection that I am digging into right now, which is, you know, thanks to Georgie Dinkoff and then my friend Constantine, who I've been just going back and forth with constantly, is it this thyroid connection that's keeping us from absorbing the progesterone that we're putting on? And
what I would suggest is thyroid is maybe the mechanism of attention. Mm-hmm. The background is varying levels of copper iron dysregulation.
Right. So that's what I mean. You hit on the ceruloplasmin not being able to fire that enzyme that helps you make progesterone. Well, why wouldn't it help you absorb progesterone as well? So I think there's something there that's super important.
And I would bet that iron gets in the way.
That damn foot soldier.
I know.
Needs to know his place.
They're everywhere. And again, people need to know that for every general, there's 60 foot soldiers. And it's just, you know, you just got to know that coppers may seem like small numbers, but it's got a lot of stars on its
head. Right.
You got to know that.
Well, Cooper, man, you did it again. I love that. Well, thank you so much. I really just love you to death. And I'm so excited for you and Dr. Mercola. I hope something is born of that because it'll be magical and fantastic.
I think it'll help reach a lot of people. I'm very, very excited about it. And I heard from a stranger yesterday that her doctor handed her my book and said, do what this guy's talking about.
That's amazing.
Isn't that cool?
I mean, it's cool, but I wish you would have said, I've read this and here's what I want you to do from it. Instead of me like, here, you read it. I don't get it.
Yeah, tell me what it says.
That's funny.
But you know what I did? I sent him an autographed copy today.
Oh, nice. Good. That's so good. Yeah. Are you going to start a podcast?
Yeah, I really want to do that.
And you should start a podcast and have these doctors on who do this. And you should chat with them.
All right. That's a good idea. We've talked about it for about 18 months and the can keeps getting kicked down. But I think maybe in the fall or maybe the beginning of 23 is when we would do it. But what I really want to do is talk to doctors, but also talk to the research scientists. And I've got several of them lined up and they're like, great. I would love to come on your show and talk about
it. That's exciting. And just call it Cure Your Fatigue.
Oh, there you go. Okay. All right.
Cure Your Fatigue, the podcast.
All right. Well, you'll
I'm the first guest.
You are, of course. All the royalties.
And then you can have on those other fancy schmancy guys.
Exactly.
But me first.
Got to start with creme de la creme, right?
Creme de la creme. La cream, yes. Retinol, highly bioavailable.
Well, I hope next time we do this conversation face-to-face. I miss... That was such a magical moment in, was it 2017 or 2018, whatever it was. That was...
Oh, when you came here. Yes, of course. Well, you're always welcome. You're always welcome.
Okay. Well, you have a lovely rest of your day, and thank you for the opportunity to have this dance, and we'll see where it goes.
Thank you, Morley. Love ya.
Are you asleep? Wake up. Like, it's over. Just kidding. I love Morley and I am so proud of him, and I'm so excited for his book and everything that's going on with his, with his work. And the fact that he's hooking up with Dr. Mercola, it really speaks volumes, because there's so many naysayers about Morley's work. And, you know, they just have a real hard time believing the ultimate lie and what he calls the big lie, which is that, you know, no one's really anemic, at least not the type of anemia that you think you have. And that vitamin D is actually not good for you. That just because you're low on something doesn't mean, you know, we're not a car. Just because your fuel tank says empty doesn't mean, you know, yeah, you go put fuel in your car. Great. That's not how the human body works. Just because you go and you have a hair mineral test and it says you have low copper and low potassium and high iron doesn't mean you go and start just taking copper and supplementing, you know, potassium. Like, that's not how we work. Unfortunately, in some cases we do, with things like progesterone and magnesium, where, you know, and with food, where you can take an abundance of whole food substances like antioxidants and phytonutrients and, you know, macronutrients and micronutrients, that's different. But as far as like getting into the deficiencies that a person has, unfortunately, just because you're low in vitamin D does not mean that that's the big issue. And it doesn't mean that taking vitamin D is going to be the answer. I mean, it might be the answer for some people, but Morley is basically saying that's most likely a red herring or a distraction. It's pulling you away from the real issue. And I love his expression, you know, we always blame the flies for the trash. And that's what we're going to blame low vitamin D for the fact that we got so sick when we got COVID, or we're going to blame vitamin D because, you know, because we're depressed, the low vitamin D. We're going to blame low iron because we have fatigue, and we're going to, you know, you get my point. And that's unfortunately not the case. Like, low vitamin D usually means low magnesium and low retinol and low vitamin E and vitamin A. Sorry. So I don't want to go into explaining it all again, but you got the picture, right? So I think it's important information. So we are not just taking a pill for every ill, you know, popping something. Okay, we're low on this, let's take that. And it's just not always the case. It's not always going to be the thing that's helpful. And the way to know for sure is it helping you? Have you been taking vitamin D for the last 2 years and then you went in and had your D levels checked and they were low? Ding, 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 something's not right. Or you were on vitamin D for a couple of months and then you got off of vitamin D and then all of a sudden your levels, you know, dramatically fell again. That's not how it works. You know, we are going after the wrong, you know, we got to go after the trash, not the flies. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you learned a lot. I am obsessed with thyroid right now. I will share everything that I learn and how it's changing my body in another podcast, probably with Constantine. We're working together. He's teaching me a bunch about, thyroid, and it's cool because I think we've been working together now for a few weeks, and by the time he's on the show and then I air the show, I will have had a nice good chunk of time where I've been working on thyroid to see what has changed in my body. And that's kind of cool. And it's one of these things that I told you in the show, I never really messed with. I always just assumed if my gut was fine, my thyroid was fine. But so many things were not right. You know, constant cold hands and feet and clammy hands and feet. Just like when I would get exhausted, it would be like extremely just, and I thought it was insulin resistance, you know, which is just wasn't. There's all these different symptoms that I'll share with you in this thyroid episode that we're going to do. And it trust me, it pertains to absolutely everyone, everyone, even children. And it could be the hidden issue behind a lot of your woes, your ailments. So by the way, my website's almost totally finished. Please visit the healthygutgirl.com shop page. There are loads of new discounts on there, loads of products you've never seen, like protocols for parasite cleanses and candida cleanses and SIBO breakthroughs and all kinds of new stuff, including, I'm not quite done with the coffee enema section, but there's going to be this whole section and it's going to be really cool. And there's testing now on there, so you can get different types of hormone testing. And so go check it out, use your coupons, do some shopping, hook a sister up, because I do get paid. That's how I get paid. Not all of them. I'm not an affiliate for all of these products, for certainly not. But for some of them, I am. And that's literally how I keep my podcast going, how I manage to, I see a lot of people for free. I do a lot of pro bono stuff, and I do a lot of stuff that just does not pay me. And so that's basically one of the ways I make a living. So support me in that way, and I will be forever indebted, and I appreciate that. So thanks for joining. We'll talk to you soon.